Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of January 12th. This week, we continue our countdown of the top 10 worst corporations of 2003. Starting with number 5, ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil was formed in 1999 through the merger of American oil giants Exxon and Mobil. Based in Irving, Texas, ExxonMobil is the world's largest investor-owned oil company. Last year, ExxonMobil reaped more than $200 billion in revenue for a tidy $11 billion profit from oil exploration, production, refining, and marketing around the world. These profits come at the expense of environmental and human rights. ExxonMobil was named one of the top 10 greenwashers of 2003 by Earth Day Resources. At the company's annual general meeting last May, shareholders voted against proposals calling for the company to report on renewable energy and climate change. Instead, ExxonMobil executives pledged to contribute $10 million a year to the Global Climate and Energy Project. This 10-year project will fund research on clean energy technologies and ways of controlling greenhouse gas emissions. But in the same decade that ExxonMobil provides $100 million for the project, the company will spend $100 billion on oil exploration and millions more to lobby governments for oil-friendly legislation. ExxonMobil is one of the largest oil industry donors to the Republican Party. In the last U.S. election cycle, the company gave more than $1 million to Republican candidates. Today, the company is promoting a Bush administration energy bill that would offer $24 billion in tax breaks to oil, gas, coal, and nuclear energy companies. The bill would also help to cover the ass of ExxonMobil and other producers of MTBE, a gasoline additive that is a known carcinogen and has contaminated groundwater in cities across the U.S. As the contamination is spread, local governments from California to New Hampshire have moved to ban MTBE and to sue the product's manufacturers. But a law protecting manufacturers from such suits has been added to the Bush energy bill thanks to Tom DeLay, a Republican from ExxonMobil's home state of Texas. ExxonMobil is no stranger to lawsuits. In 1994, the company's parent, Exxon, was forced to pay the largest punitive damages settlement in history after an Alaskan federal jury awarded $5.3 billion to fishermen and other people whose livelihoods were devastated by the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil tanker spill. Last summer, an appeals court in Atlanta ordered ExxonMobil to pay a $1.2 billion settlement to 10,000 American gas station owners who were overcharged for gasoline between 1982 and 1994. More recently, ExxonMobil has been ordered to pay an $11.9 billion settlement to the state of Alabama. The state sued ExxonMobil in 1999, contending that the company violated leases for natural gas wells in state-owned waters along the Alabama coast. The suit claimed that ExxonMobil cheated Alabama out of millions of dollars by intentionally overstating the cost of operating these wells. While Exxon was destroying the coast of Alaska, Mobil was paying for the Indonesian military to guard a natural gas plant in Aceh province, where the Free Aceh movement has waged a decades-long battle for independence. Leaders of the Free Aceh movement claim that Mobil encouraged the Indonesian army to use company property for the interrogation, torture, and murder of civilians. A mass grave has been discovered footsteps away from a military post at what is now ExxonMobil's refinery. In a lawsuit brought forth on behalf of 11 civilians from Aceh, Washington's International Labor Rights Fund maintained that the company should be held liable for murders, torture, sexual crimes, and kidnappings perpetrated by the Indonesian soldiers paid to guard ExxonMobil property. The lawsuit was launched in 2001. In April 2002, ExxonMobil requested that the judge ask the U.S. State Department how the lawsuit might affect foreign relations with Indonesia. In July of that year, the State Department called for the case to be dismissed on the basis that a settlement would harm U.S. interests in the war on terrorism. In Aceh, the struggle for independence continues under ongoing attacks from the Indonesian military that result in 6,000 civilian and combatant deaths each year. According to one journalist's report, the regions surrounding ExxonMobil gas fields in Aceh account for 40% of the military and militia personnel in the entire province, and are the areas where most civilian deaths are reported. ExxonMobil is the second largest source of foreign tax revenue for the Indonesian government, providing a crucial source of funds for ongoing military operations in Aceh. Despite the bloodbath, ExxonMobil shows no intention of leaving the country. ExxonMobil is also pumping oil out of war-torn Chad through a giant pipeline constructed under the auspices of the World Bank. In 2000, Chad's government admitted to diverting $4 million worth of the pipeline's investment funds to buy weapons for use in its war against northern rebels. The construction of the pipeline has also attracted criticism from environmentalists who claim that the pipeline has destroyed habitat for endangered species and forced the relocation of families in Chad and Cameroon. In Nigeria, ExxonMobil has come under fire for racist labor policies. Since Mobil's merger with Exxon, the company has systematically replaced Nigerian staff with expatriates, leading to strikes and protests by Nigerian workers. At home, ExxonMobil is accused of discriminating against gay and lesbian workers. After the 1999 merger, ExxonMobil removed sexual orientation from Mobil's Equal Employment Opportunity Statement and suspended enrollment in Mobil's Domestic Partner Benefits Program. Since then, the company has consistently voted down shareholder resolutions requesting the reinstatement of sexual orientation to the Equal Opportunity Employment Statement. Number four on our list of the worst corporations of 2003 is Dow. Dow Chemical, the largest U.S. chemical company, also produces pesticides, biotech seeds, silicon-based materials, and petroleum-based plastics. Dow operates more than 200 manufacturing facilities around the world, employing more than 50,000 people. The company's annual sales top $28 billion. Dow has a history of profiting from war and oppression. During World War I, the company sold mustard gas and picric acid. In World War II, it supplied magnesium for bombs. For the Vietnam War, Dow created napalm, a jelly-like chemical used to cause acid burns on victims' bodies, and manufactured Agent Orange, a defoliant deployed by U.S. aircraft. Today, an estimated 500,000 Vietnamese children suffer from congenital deformities caused by exposure to the dioxins in Agent Orange. Dow supplied South Africa's apartheid regime with herbicides that have rendered the border between South Africa and Zimbabwe infertile. Last year, inhabitants of the region launched a $71 million lawsuit against the company on behalf of local farmers who are still unable to grow crops in the area. Another lawsuit launched last year accuses Dow and other companies of defrauding South African workers under apartheid. Chlorine bleach was the first product manufactured by Dow at the end of the 19th century. Today, Dow is the world's leading producer of chlorine, chlorine-based chemicals, and polyvinyl chloride, or PVC. As a result, Dow is one of the world's leading producers of dioxin, a category of chemicals formed when chlorine-based molecules are burned with hydrocarbons. Dioxins are highly toxic substances linked to cancer, deformities, reproductive failure, and immune system dysfunction. Dow headquarters in Midland, Michigan, are alleged to be responsible for dioxin contamination along the Tittabawassee River. Soil samples taken along this river last year revealed dioxin levels up to 80 times the state standard for safe human contact. State health officials are investigating whether the contamination has spread to local homes and families. Meanwhile, 170 Midland residents have filed a lawsuit seeking reparations from Dow for jeopardizing their health and devaluing their property. Similar contamination was found 2 years ago in a Louisiana trailer park near Dow's factory in Plaquemine, Louisiana. In January 2002, residents of the trailer park filed a lawsuit against Dow, alleging that the company knew about contamination in the community and tried to cover it up. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is also taking action against Dow for polluting the Brazos River in Texas. In 2001, Dow merged with Union Carbide, adding to the toxic skeletons in Dow's corporate closet. In 1984, a poisonous gas leak at Union Carbide's plant in Bhopal, India, killed 8,000 people and injured up to 500,000 more. Union Carbide fled from India after paying just $470 million in compensation to survivors. The company left behind thousands of tons of toxic waste, which has since entered the region's groundwater. In November 2002, Dow was ordered by U.S. investigators to release Union Carbide documents that proved the company eliminated safety measures to cut costs at Bhopal before the disaster occurred. Since 1986, India has had outstanding charges against Union Carbide and its executives. The story took a turn for the strange last year after activists from Greenpeace and the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal presented samples of contaminated soil and water from the disaster site at Dow's Indian headquarters in Bombay. The company is now suing activists for work time lost due to the protest. Along with criminal charges stemming from Bhopal, Dow inherited liabilities from workers exposed to asbestos at Union Carbide plants in the U.S. Together with other companies facing asbestos suits, Dow is lobbying the U.S. government to pass a bill barring victims from suing asbestos manufacturers. Dow has contributed almost $4 million to the Republican Party since 1989, making it the largest chemical industry contributor to Republican candidates. In addition, Dow pays more than 80 lobbyists to work on its behalf at the federal and state levels and gives money to lobby groups such as the Chemical Manufacturers Association. Along with its work on the asbestos front, Dow Dow lobbyists pressure government officials to fight the European Union's ban on genetically modified organisms. In collaboration with Cargill, Dow is growing biotech corn, not just for use as livestock and human feed, but to create new plastics and ethanol-based gasoline additives, which the companies dub environmentally friendly, even though the long-term effects of biotech corn on farmland and surrounding ecosystems have not been studied. Dow was recently fined by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for mishandling biotech corn at an experimental farm in Hawaii. The company was cited for not isolating the genetically altered corn and for failing to plant enough trees as a buffer zone to prevent cross-pollination with neighboring fields. As part of its agribusiness ventures, Dow has marketed countless toxic pesticides and herbicides such as DDT. Most recently, the company was sued for falsely advertising the pesticide chlorpyrifos under the brand name Dursban. Chlorpyrifos is a nerve toxin that has caused 7,000 reported injuries every year since it arrived on the market. Last month, Dow was ordered to pay a $2 million penalty to the state of New York for advertising Dursban with false claims of product safety. Number three on the list of the worst corporations of 2003 is Bechtel. Bechtel is a privately owned multinational corporation specializing in engineering and construction. Based in San Francisco, the company employs 44,000 people in 60 countries. Last April, Bechtel was awarded a U.S. government contract worth up to $680 million for so-called reconstruction projects in Iraq, including the rebuilding and expansion of Iraq's electrical grid, water supply, and wastewater systems. The contract was awarded through a limited bidding process that took place behind closed doors. Critics claim that Bechtel won the deal thanks to the company's close ties with Republican Party members. Former Secretary of State George Shultz sits on Bechtel's board of directors and chairs the advisory board of the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, a group set up last year to support Bush's war efforts. Bechtel's CEO, Riley Bechtel, serves on the President's Export Council. Despite suggestions of a conflict of interest, Bechtel has won yet another U.S. government contract in Iraq. This time, the company stands to earn $1.8 billion rebuilding airports, public buildings, schools, and ports destroyed by the U.S. military. Meanwhile, reports from Iraq suggest that the company is going about its reconstruction efforts in a rather haphazard way, using substandard materials and ignoring much-needed repairs. American taxpayers have every right to be concerned about this use of public funds. In a report jointly released by CorpWatch, Global Exchange, and Public Citizen last summer, case studies from Bechtel's history in the water, energy, and utility sectors reveal the company's century-long track record of financial mismanagement, environmental devastation, and human rights violations. In Papua New Guinea, Bechtel helped to construct a gold mine that dumps toxic waste directly into local rivers each day. In Mexico, Bechtel partnered with Shell to build a power plant that exports energy to the U.S. in contravention of U.S. environmental laws. In the U.S., Bechtel has been responsible for a series of accidents at nuclear power plants, including Three Mile Island. The company has also drained public coffers through extensive cost overruns on public works projects in Boston and San Francisco. In Bolivia, Bechtel's efforts to privatize water in the country's third largest city provoked mass protests 3 years ago. After taking over Cochabamba's water supply in 2000, Bechtel imposed massive price hikes, leaving many people unable to afford drinking water. The resulting civil disruption forced Bolivia's government to cancel Bechtel's contract. Now the company is suing the country for $25 million in lost profit they might have earned if the contract hadn't been canceled. Number two on our list of the top 10 worst corporations of 2003 is Halliburton. If Bechtel's ties to the Republican administration are enough to raise eyebrows, Halliburton's should definitely draw a frown. U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney was Halliburton's CEO for 5 years between his posts under Republican administrations. As head of the Pentagon under George Bush Sr., Cheney worked to privatize operations on U.S. military bases. Then, after Cheney became CEO of Halliburton in 1995, the company jumped from number 73 to number 18 on the Pentagon's list of top contractors, thanks largely to lucrative contracts supplying Army bases. 1 year after Cheney became vice president in November of 2000, a subsidiary of Halliburton known as Kellogg Brown & Root secured a 10-year contract to supply the U.S. military in all its misadventures. Last March, Halliburton and its subsidiary won contracts to supply the military and provide oil services in Iraq. These contracts were awarded without competitive bidding of any kind. Several months later, a draft audit found evidence that Kellogg Brown & Root had overcharged up to $61 million for supplying fuel from Kuwait to Iraq. In response to ensuing scandal, the U.S. Army temporarily pulled the plug on Halliburton, taking on up to $2 billion worth of contracts to rebuild Iraq's oil industry. These contracts are now going to be auctioned off through a competitive bidding process. Nonetheless, Halliburton executives and U.S. military officials are scrambling to deny any wrongdoing on the part of Kellogg Brown and Root. But denial is an everyday occurrence for Cheney and his Halliburton cronies. In 2000, Cheney told reporters that Halliburton had no business ties to Iraq while he was head of the company. Less than 1 year later, the Washington Post reported that Halliburton, in fact, held stakes in two companies with contracts to sell more than $73 million worth of oil production equipment and parts to Iraq, while Cheney was chairman and CEO. Halliburton executives recently admitted that Kellogg Brown and Root paid a multi-million dollar bribe to Nigerian tax officials 2 years ago. In a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the company disclosed that $2.4 million was paid in 2001 and 2002 to obtain favorable tax treatment for the company from the Nigerian government. One has to wonder how much money the company has paid U.S. government officials for their favorable treatment. This much is known. While Halliburton and its subsidiaries rack up federal contracts for military support services, construction, and oil supply in Iraq, U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney receives up to $200,000 per year in deferred compensation from the company. And number one on our list of the top 10 worst corporations of 2003 is Boeing. Based in Chicago, Boeing is the world's largest manufacturer of commercial airplanes and the second largest U.S. defense contractor after Lockheed Martin, building fighter jets, bombers, transport planes, and Apache helicopters for use in military operations around the world. For decades, Boeing was primarily a commercial aircraft dealer, earning most of its revenue from passenger jet sales. But in the aftermath of 9/11, Boeing's defense division became much more profitable than its commercial aircraft wing. The company has always lobbied U.S. Congress to increase defense spending and to win military contracts. But as military sales have become the company's chief source of income, Boeing has adopted increasingly aggressive tactics to obtain Defense Department funds. Last July, the company was banned from bidding on U.S. military satellite launching contracts after it was discovered that Boeing employees had stolen documents from Lockheed Martin in an effort to outbid their rival. Then last month, Boeing fired two key executives for an alleged breach of ethics, Boeing's chief financial officer Mike Sears and the company's vice president of missile defense systems Darlene Droyan are named in the scandal. Sears negotiated for Boeing to give Droyan a high-paying job while she was working for the Pentagon in a position where she could influence Boeing contracts. At around the same time, Boeing won a contract to supply the Pentagon with 100 jets for use as refueling tankers. All was business as usual until documents were uncovered to reveal that Droyan, while still an Air Force Secretary for Acquisition and Management at the Pentagon, had informed Boeing that Airbus was submitting a bid that would undercut Boeing's offer. As a result of the shady dealings, both Droyan and Sears have been fired. U.S. federal regulators are investigating the contract. Just days after the departure of Sears and Droyan, Boeing CEO Phil Condit resigned unexpectedly. For now, Boeing has brought Harry Stonecipher out of retirement to act as CEO. Stonecipher, a 67-year-old former president and CEO of the company, has served on Boeing's board since 1997. A spokesman for the union representing engineering and technical workers at Boeing says there will be trepidation among Boeing workers at Stonecipher's ascension to CEO. Stonecipher was head of the company when that union went on strike 3 years ago. In the aftermath of 9/11, the company has drastically cut jobs and reduced job security for its unionized workers. With ongoing scandals, its commercial aircraft business mothballed, and no new Pentagon contracts in sight, Boeing could be in line for more job losses and labor disputes. That's a wrap for Annie Beasney's Top 10 Worst Corporations of 2003. Signing off, this is Annie Beasney's reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.